Hello, welcome to another podcast episode. I'm Ray. I think you know that by now. 5 years I've been doing these podcasts. 5 years. Looking out of the window, the flag is blowing like a mental thing from the west, so wind from the west. It's not too cold. It's 12 degrees, which is, what, 55 Fahrenheit? I've just looked it up and I've forgotten. 99% humidity. That's the mist. It really is misty. I can't see the trees over the road. Back of the houses over there, I can't see the trees because of the mist. Everywhere is just damp and wet and dull all the time. 10-30 millibars on the barometer. But hopefully it'll start cheering up a little bit soon. My sister and her husband bought over some sweet pea plants yesterday for me and some more tomato plants. I've got loads now. I don't quite know where I'm going to put them all. I have bought a couple more tubs for the tomatoes and the sweet peas. I'll find somewhere for them. The more the better. It's Sunday, and you know what I've got in store for you this Sunday, don't you? Do you remember what I told you on Wednesday? Were you paying attention? Probably not. I doubt you even listened to Wednesday's midweek message. If you've forgotten, it's Diane, my sister-in-law. She was a nurse for over 40 years, and I had a good old chat with her. We will come to that later. How has your week been? Has it been any good? Did you see the eclipse? Was it the full eclipse of the sun? We didn't see it here in the UK, but I know a lot of you did over in America, across the pond, as they say. Pond, it's hardly a pond, is it? It's an ocean. Anyway, it's called a pond. That's good enough. So did you see the eclipse? I did watch it on the television coming from various places in America, which was interesting. But of course, we didn't see it here, which is a shame. Hello to Mark over there in Dublin, who thought it was funny that my new washing machine, if it was connected to the Wi-Fi, might tell Beijing that I'm washing my socks. I didn't think that particularly funny, Mark, until you said about it. And then I did find it funny, washing my socks. And someone else, who else was it? That was Steve. Hello, Steve. Thanks for your comments. I was joking. I know fridges don't order milk and things when you're getting low. But I do think, Steve, that the day will come when fridges know what's in the fridge. They'll be telling Beijing, they're short of milk. Ray's Rant's fridge. Don't go around there for coffee. They haven't got any milk. No, seriously, I don't know why these appliances have to talk to each other. Well, not each other, is it? I don't know what they do. I do see the point, though, Steve. You can check the temperature of the fridge or whatever, things like that. But we didn't want a washing machine that goes online at all. There's no need for it. It's like our security cameras around the house. We don't want them online. People hack into them. And that's quite easy to do. It's easier than people think. You can go and look around the internet, find people's cameras. You want the username. They just leave it as admin. The password, 1234. They don't bother to change anything. You can hook into their camera and have a look to see what their garden looks like or whatever. Cameras shouldn't need to go online. This is where the old days were good. We didn't have cameras and your washing machine telling Beijing you're washing your socks. Didn't even have security cameras. When did they come in the town, you know, or wherever, even in offices and buildings, warehouses, security cameras? I think they must have come in quite a while ago, probably 80s. Large cameras, of course, not these little things you have these days, big old cameras with Vidicon. Were they called Vidicons in them? The tube, black and white, of course, not colour. I'll have to look into that, find out exactly when security cameras came out. Probably a lot earlier than people think. Do you remember the first camera you ever owned? Not video, ordinary photo type camera. Mine was a Brownie 127. Who remembers the Brownie 127? Crikey, that was a while ago. I was about 12, I think. And I got that for probably a birthday or whatever it was. And there were a couple of rolls of film with it, black and white again, no colour. And we went on a picnic, the family picnic. What did I take photos of? Not the family, cows in a field. I remember that. I took photos of cows in a field. Why? I just thought it was great fun. I think there are only about 12 photos you could take on the reel. I used two reels up within sort of 15 minutes. That was it. Then I had to take them to the chemist, have them developed. You have to wait a few days. And half of them were blurred. I think two or three of them were of the grass. I'd somehow pointed to the ground and just taken photos. Total waste of time, but great fun though. I did spend a lot of pocket money on films and having them developed. But where are those photos now? All gone. I haven't got a clue where they are. Probably lost somewhere, thrown out, whatever. What a shame. Be great to look through those now. I'm not going to waffle on anymore because I know you're all waiting to hear the interview about nursing with Diane, my sister-in-law. We had a chat. The first thing I asked her was, what made you go into nursing? When did you decide you wanted to be a nurse? At what age did you realise you wanted to be a nurse? This is what she said.
Well, I sort of always wanted to be a nurse, really. I mean, I think when Dad was in hospital, you know, Dad went in when
yes.
he was...
Yes, what age were you then?
That was 1971, so I would have been seven years old. Dad was in hospital for 2 weeks. We visited him a couple of times in the hospital, and I was just fascinated. I went in the door, just the smells, the sights, the tubes, the beds.
The smell of a hospital.
Yeah, and the nurses running around and people just... Yeah, and it just fascinated, and I wanted to know what was going on. I thought, oh, this is really interesting. I mean, I was sort of sitting with Dad, but I wanted to have a look and see what everything was happening with everyone else. So just, fascinated by it.
It's nice to know when you're at school what career you want to do, rather than leave and think, well, now what do I do? That's good. So what did you do? When you left school, go to the hospital and say, have you got any jobs?
Well, initially, there was thoughts of me training to be a doctor. Oh. So I was doing all right with my exams until I got to 16. And then I discovered men, motorbikes, music, going out and about.
Pink Floyd.
Failed me. A-levels.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I didn't do very well at my A-levels. And that was my fault because I didn't study. I was lazy. And I thought, well, I've got good O-levels. What can I do with good O-levels? And a careers thing showed nursing. And there used to be an advert on telly, people remember nurses.
Yes.
And I remember seeing that and I used to think, people remember nurses. And I saw they had a leaflet from Worthing and Southlands Hospital about training there, and I looked at it over and over again. I thought, do you know what, I could do that. So I applied and got an interview. They wanted me to continue and take my A-levels. I knew I was going to fail them, but I said, okay, then I could take my A-levels. So they offered me a job in the April, and I could have started in May, but they said, no, take your A-levels. So I didn't start till the September. So I went over to Southlands Hospital, had an interview. Dad took me over there in the car and he was sat outside waiting for me to come out. And then they wanted to speak to him because in those days they liked to meet your parents as well.
Right. Yeah.
So there's Dad in his scruffy old clothes. So he came in and chatted to them.
Yeah.
They showed us all around the hospital. They had a little volunteer lady. Spent more time chatting to Dad than she did to me because she quite liked him. We had a look round the wards and that was it. And they offered me a job and I started
They
in
offered
September.
It to you then and there?
Yeah.
When did you start?
September 1982.
Right. So what did you do? Where did you go? Sort of 9 o'clock Monday morning when you start?
Oh, no. We started... I was offered a job and I decided to be in residence at the hospital because obviously you finish it late, and that was at Southlands Hospital, Shoreham.
So you left home?
I left home, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of. I was half at home, half at the nurse's home. So on the Sunday evening, Dad and Mum drove me over to Southlands Hospital, and they had a nurse's home called Beeding House where all the introductory block nurses started. Yeah. So we're all brand new. They put us alphabetically along the corridor. So my two closest friends there had very similar names in the alphabet. One began with a P, one with an R, and we're all sort of we're all friends at one end, and they were friends at the other end as well with the lower letters in the alphabet. But
brilliant.
And I had a single room. You had your own single room. You didn't have your own bathroom or anything like that.
No.
You had a shared.
Did you have to pay for accommodation?
Yeah, £10 a week.
Did you?
So that was
out
it.
Of your weight. Well, that's a lot of money.
It paid £160 a month.
Right.
And 40 of that went on lodging, so...
Okay. You had to buy your own food, of course.
Oh, yes. Bought your own food. There was a kitchen. Everybody used to steal your food.
Oh, did they?
They'd have a big old fridge there, and if you weren't careful, somebody would have eaten whatever you'd planned to have for your next meal.
Right. But you enjoyed it all, though?
Yeah, I loved it. It was nice, but the nurse's home was great.
Yeah.
We arrived on the Sunday night, unpacked all our stuff, started chatting to all the other girls, and then all the male nurses that lived in Thacombe House came mooching over to see what the new girls looked like. So we had all the male nurses over.
Yeah. What did you do? Go straight onto a ward or into, like, classes?
You started in the School of Nursing. They used to have an old... It was a very tatty old building at the back of Southlands. It was like a flat roof thing. It was a bit rough and it had classrooms, but mainly elderly nurse tutors, sort of women in their 50s, 60s that had, I'm saying that I'm 60 now, but older women, a lot of them single women that had been in nursing all their lives, and they just became nurse tutors. And it was, you know, like a school, and you had six weeks in introductory block where you did odd trips out onto the ward.
So you did have a little trip on the ward down then?
Yeah, making beds.
Yes.
Putting people on bedpans. We practiced putting each other on bedpans first, which was quite hilarious. And they had a room which had beds, bedpans and all the things, you know, bedpan washers. And
there's so much to learn. In 6 weeks, you couldn't have learned everything, obviously.
Well, no, you learn the basics. I mean, you could be useful making beds. You could be useful giving people a drink. You could help somebody get on a bedpan. You were taught how to lift patients, so you could help them move and transfer from bed to chair. And
stick needles in people.
We did practice sticking needles in oranges, which they did actually do.
Oh, really?
And we practiced. And I mean, the very first time I stuck a needle in an actual human being, it was, my hands were shaking.
That must have been, I mean, if you're taking blood, you've got to get in the vein. Anyway, we don't want to go into
blood. We didn't do that. Didn't take blood. That's a later on skill, I have to say. Yeah. But injections were fine. I mean,
did you have to pay for your uniform?
No.
Oh, that was supplied.
Yeah, we had checked uniforms, pale blue checked uniforms.
I remember them, yes.
And the qualified nurses had plain uniforms.
Yeah.
And we had hats with stripes. And in your first year, you had one stripe. Second year, you had two stripes. Third year, you had three stripes. And when you qualified, you had a wide band.
It was very, what's the word, sort of military, wasn't it? Was there a matron that you had?
Yes, there was matrons.
And was she like Hattie Jakes in the Carry On film?
There was more than one matron. There was one for surgical matron, there was night matrons, there was ones for the medical side, ones for the care of the elderly.
Were they fierce?
Probably fierce isn't the right word.
I've been reading the Nursing Times, as you do, just doing some homework, and it says here, in the 1960s, that's way before your time, of course, matron was still very much a figure of fear and to be respected by the nursing staff. Her word was law, and nurses were only allowed to speak to her or sister if they were addressed.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you didn't mess with the matrons.
No.
But I never felt they didn't come across as, not all of them, some of them were a bit more formidable than others, and some of the ward sisters were pretty horrendous.
But they were scary.
Yeah, so you respected them because I was a first-year nurse and used to sit in the whole hospital was staffed virtually by student nurses and just one or two trained nurses on each ward. So there was hundreds of student nurses everywhere. And you knew your place, you know. I was an introductory block nurse, so basically going on the ward, you were just sort of the lowest of the low. And gradually you moved out. And you mean, a nursing officer would speak to you occasionally, but not often. They would generally go in and speak to the staff nurses.
Did you do shift work? Did you have to work at night?
Yes.
Because it's 24 hours, obviously, a hospital, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you started, say, introductory block. You did your 6 weeks. Yeah. And then they allocated you a ward and you had a placement for about 9 to 10 weeks. Your first placements were a medical placement or a surgical placement. And then you swapped. So you did, like, 6 months of the year, 3 months on medical, 3 months on surgical. And you worked there. And you worked. You didn't. If there was something interesting going on, they might let you see it if you were free. If you had work to do, you had patients to, you know, wash, dress, get up. You didn't. You just did the work because you were there to work and learn alongside it. So
yeah. Just going back to matrons. When I was in hospital in 60-something or other, the doctors did their rounds, as they probably still do. And this matron, this chap in the bed next to me, was reading a newspaper. And she went and snatched it. He said, "Oh, I'm reading that." And she said, "No, you're not. The doctor's coming round." It was that strict. And you could see the nurses were terrified of her. Do they have matrons now?
Yeah, they do. They have clinical matrons.
Right.
I mean, which is sort of like a grade 8 or a grade 9, which is like above the sisters. But they're not. You have bed managers as well, which are sort of like a matron. They organise which beds you go to. Yeah. And the clinical matrons are what they, you know, they can help organise the work, organise the staff.
Right.
But at the time, no, they were formidable. And you had to, if you knew that there was a ward round, matron possibly could be coming with a consultant, you'd have to make sure the beds were made, everything was tidy, patients were sat on their beds or beside their beds. They weren't allowed to be wandering around or gone out for a fag, because they did used to be allowed to go outside to smoke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that reminds me of something else. Did they? Is it true that people were given Mackeson, beer?
Yeah, I mean, we used to give Guinness. Oh, you did? Guinness, yeah. We give people Guinness. It's right. Usually on the care of the elderly ward where they feel a little treat of Guinness. Or a brandy. Or whiskey.
NHS?
Yeah, and they were in the trolley in medicine bottles and it had whiskey or brandy or whatever. And you'd have a little measuring pot and you'd measure out 30 mils or 60 mils.
So there was a drinks trolley.
It had all the pills as well, but you'd have all the drinks at one end, along with the laxatives and the other things.
All I got was Lucozade and my mum had to pay for that.
Yeah, no, you would. That was more for the elderly, sort of the long term. That
I was 14, they wouldn't have given me beer, would they?
Yeah, of course they wouldn't.
Unfortunately, I do remember the doctor round, and in the 60s, I had long hair, of course, even though I was 14. And one of the nurses was ordered by the matron to go and sort his hair out. I had to have my hair combed because the doctor was coming round. Incredible, isn't it?
The matrons obviously ran the hospital as such, but the consultants, everyone, you had to defer to the doctors as a nurse when I started. You did defer to the doctors. And nowadays, I think it's good because all the nurses are degree trained, and if they think something is wrong, they don't defer to the doctors. They will argue their case and put their point across, and I think that's so much better. We just accepted what we were the doctor's handmaidens to a degree. They were starting to get a little bit more assertive, some of the nurses, but really you were basically the doctors were in charge, and we did the care, they did the clinical decisions.
Did you work in the operating theatre?
Did you
observe?
Yes. No, I was in there. They got us in there helping. We had to help set the trolleys up. And I was in there watching hip replacements, hysterectomies, caesareans.
Oh, God. Right.
Yeah, all sorts.
Did the surgeon say scalpel and hold his hand up?
To be quite honest, it was the senior nurses that dealt with the surgeons, because they couldn't have some numbnuts handing them the scalpel the wrong way round and cutting the surgeon's hand. You'd be too nervous. So,
yeah.
I mean, they used to have the senior nurse, but you could be a runner. You'd be going out to get things and running backwards and forwards, and you were sort of in there. Well, orthopaedics sounded like a carpenter's shop. You could hear drills going, you could hear chisels, you could hear when people having hip done, their legs are in all sorts of strange positions.
So it's not just scalpel, it's hacksaw,
file. It could be hacksaw, and there was even like Black and Decker saws that they were using for cutting into bones. But yeah, I never felt queasy because I'm not really... I'm only queasy if the children have cut themselves, and then I don't. It's not even queasy then. I just can't bear it if the children hurt themselves.
I can't see children being hurt and stuff.
That's why I didn't go into paediatrics as a general. I did had to do a placement on paediatrics, but 9 weeks was enough.
And you worked on A&E?
For a long time, yeah. That was my favourite. Yeah. I wouldn't have left if they did Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, I'd have stayed in A&E because I loved it. It was an interesting place to work, always something happening, something different.
Yes, that must have been interesting. Well, I don't know if that's the right word, interesting.
Challenging.
That's the word.
Challenging, and it was interesting, and there was sometimes fun. You had a laugh, with patients. Not always about them, but, sometimes there was a... you never knew what was coming through the door.
You worked at a GP surgery in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, for nearly 20 years in the end. And that was all right, because you didn't always know what was going on. Well, you never knew what was going on in doctor surgery. But it was, people weren't staying there. They'd come in with their problem and they'd go again. It's not like nursing them on the ward. Mm. And you get to know their families then more. And, their granny would come in with something and you'd see them or their kids. And you knew the whole family and you got involved. And generally less serious things than you would see in A&E. It was more ongoing treatments.
And then you retired. You did your bit and retired.
I retired at 55, yes.
Well, why not? You've done your bit.
I've done my bit. And I've left a daughter doing her bit now, so she's...
Yes, that'd be nice to interview her, wouldn't it, to see what it's like now. Yeah. They go to university these days.
Laura went to university, and that was in... She went in 20... When did she go? She would have gone 2008. Mm. She started her training, so she...
Do you think that's better? Does she ever... On university, do they ever see a ward?
They do go on placements, I mean, I think they teach them all to be sort of like critical thinkers and actually go for evidence-based rather than what you've just been told to do. You do research it yourself, you understand it. And I think if you're going to be a good nurse, however you're trained, you'll still be a good nurse.
Yeah. I suppose there's a balance between, like, theory and... practical stuff, isn't it? You've got to have the theory, but at the same time you need to be doing practical.
I mean, you do need to be doing practical, and I still think there's a place for nurses that don't go to university, some that are really good bedside nurses, but maybe don't have the academic knowledge to be, you know, sort of one of the more, you know, senior nurses, just doing the actual patient care.
Is there still, what was it, SENSRN? Is there still...
Not now as such. They have, they call them level one nurses now, like the old SRNs. And you can have healthcare assistants that got MVQs and various things like that, so that are more qualified. But the old SEN grade sort of disappeared, really, because you used to need two O levels to be an SEN, five O levels to be an SRN. And that was the minimum qualification. So
I keep hearing on the telly and on the news that the NHS is on its knees.
Well, it is.
Why is that, do you think?
Again, as you know me, I'm quite political anyway. It has been... The waiting lists have been going up steadily since 2010. Yeah. Austerity starved it of money, and you can't keep starving it of money.
They keep saying, though, they're throwing millions at it.
They are, but not necessarily in the right places. Mm. And the number of people needing the service is going up. People are leaving. We've lost nurses back to the EU because, you know, they haven't got an automatic right to work here. They're now saying carers won't be able to bring their families from abroad if they come to work here. They won't have an automatic right to bring their families here. And who's going to do that necessarily? If you want to set up a new life, work in the NHS, do you want to leave your family still abroad?
No, of course not. And what about doctors and nurses going to America and Australia, where you get a lot more money?
Less so to America. They tend to go to Australia.
Do they? Yeah.
But, I mean, yes, a lot of them do go there because it's much better conditions in the service there. However, the cost of living there is quite a lot higher. Mm. So they're not necessarily much better off than they are here, just maybe not quite so stretched.
And the private sector here, they get paid more?
Not necessarily more nursing-wise. The doctors certainly get more because they're working in there. I have some reservations about the private sector, only because in as much as the fact a lot of them don't provide intensive care. So if you have an operation there, something goes wrong, they ship you back into the NHS. Therefore, they don't have to pay to maintain the emergency services there. Not all. Some have, but not all.
Yeah.
And they are working their doctors into the ground, some of them, because now they want more cover in the private hospitals. And even the private doctors are now starting to get more overworked and stressed as well, because they're pushing patients in from the NHS into the private and they're not necessarily as well equipped to cope with them.
So really, we've got too many people, not enough staff.
And not enough money going in. It is hard. As you know my political persuasion, but it was getting better under Labour, I have to say. The Conservatives, I've got a nasty feeling that they're trying to slowly privatise. And I think if you get it to fail, then the chance of privatising it gets higher.
Yes, we'll end up like America.
Yeah, which is not good. Some of the European systems are part private, part, you know, sort of state services, and they're not necessarily so bad, but you wouldn't want the American system because you lose your house if you get ill. There's Medicare for those that have nothing, but some people don't even have enough money to pay for their insulin. They're diabetics. They struggle to find their next dollar for insulin. You want NHS free at the point of use. I don't see why patients can't pay for their food while they're in hospital and pay for normal... You mean you'd be paying for food at home, pay for it in hospital.
Yeah. You'd be paying for food, heating and the rest of it. That's right, especially food.
Chipping into that, couldn't you?
Mm. If they just charge like a couple of pounds for a meal. Yeah.
And I think most people would actually be happy to pay more taxes if they knew it was going directly to the NHS to be used properly, not wasted or frittered or spent on management.
Are there too many chiefs and not enough Indians, as they used to say in the old days?
I think there was for a while, but I think they've cut down a lot on management now. But then you still need management because CQC come visiting and you need to have things organised properly. So if you don't have it organised properly, they'll penalise you.
Oh, that's great, Diane. Thanks.
Was there any other...
You think of anything? What would you like to add?
Not really. I just love nursing and I always, throughout my career, I couldn't see why anyone wouldn't love being a nurse because you're helping people at their most vulnerable and it's actually it's an honour to be able to help people at times.
You obviously don't go into nursing to get rich. It's a vocation.
No, you don't go in to get rich, but you can go in there. You get, in other ways, you get a lot of satisfaction from it and you can really make a difference to people, and that's what I like.
That's nice. That's lovely. Okay, thanks, Diane. We'll end it there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. I could have talked to Diane for hours more. You know, it was really interesting. I thought so anyway. there are so many aspects to nursing that it would be fascinating to chat further. Perhaps we will one day. Perhaps I'll get around here again and we'll chat over a cup of tea. Trish brought us tea while we were talking, which was rather nice. So if you enjoyed that, let me know. raysrants@protonmail.com. Let me know, because I'll try and get other people to interview. Not interview, it's more chat to or chat with, isn't it? It's not an interview. I'm sure Diane would have had a lot more to say had we lengthened the session. But there we are. That was a good start. That was my first ever. There's that word interview again. Chat. I know I spoke to Trish, didn't I? Do you remember that? A lot of you said get Trish back on the podcast episodes again, which I will do. But that was with Diane. That was my first proper, we'll call it an interview, just for want of a better word. And I must admit, I was a bit not nervous, but not anxious even, just concerned that would it go all right? Would I muck up, you know, go and say daft things that I'd have to edit? Or would she be all right? She was perfect. I thought she was brilliant. In fact, she made it so easy for me because she just did most of the talking. All I did listening to it, all I did was, yes, oh, right, right, Far from a professional interviewer. Anyway, it's all good fun. When I was in hospital in 1964, I believe it was, Was it 4 or 5? I was 14. I'd ruptured my liver, fell off my bike and ruptured my liver. And they were in two minds whether to put me on men's surgical or the children's ward. Unfortunately, I went on men's surgical, which at 14, I don't think was a good idea. There's all these old men there. A lot of them were very ill and, well, I won't go into details, but it wasn't at all nice. I remember being on the trolley outside the operating theatre. And there was a, what I assumed to be a student nurse. She was 18, I think, something like that. She held my hand. They were waiting, I think, for the surgeon. And I was kind of going in and out of consciousness with the dreadful pain of my ripped liver. And she was holding my hand, bless her, telling me about her boyfriend. And she kept saying, don't go to sleep. You're not allowed to go to sleep. And I felt sorry for her. I really didn't want to hear about her boyfriend. But what can I do? She was doing her best. And eventually they came along, wheeled me into the theatre. And all I remember seeing are the big lights, people around me, big lights. And the next thing I knew, must have been the following day, I was in the ward and the matron, it was, came over to me and said, you've had an operation. Oh, have I? I didn't know what was going on. But they were fantastic. The staff were fantastic. I was right up near the nurse's or the matron's office bit, whatever it was, when I first came out of theatre. As you get better, you work your way down the ward, away from her desk and her office bit. And I ended up, when you're really getting better, on this, it was a kind of conservatory. It was on the first floor, but there was like a balcony, which was all glass windows. It was summertime, and it was lovely, the sun shining. I had this huge window open next to my bed, and I actually got my legs brown. I'm on top of the bed, sunbathing. How about that? It was really good. What I didn't like was the night times, because at night, when I was actually on the main ward, I didn't sleep very well. And at night, quite a few times when I was there, curtains were drawn round a bed and a trolley was wheeled out. And I called the nurse, yeah, what's happening? What's going on? Nothing, she said, nothing to worry you. You know, oh, I knew what had happened. And it must have happened. At least 5 people were wheeled out while I was there for the 2 weeks. But moving on from that, the young nurses, they were great fun, threatening to cut my hair and having all sorts of laughs with me, when matron wasn't around, of course. They were good times. And, of course, I think I've mentioned before, the bonus was I was 14 years old and I didn't have to go back to school. What a result. Not really an ideal way of getting out of school, but it certainly worked. I've only had 2 operations. That was the first one. The second one was to remove a parathyroid. That must be, what, 30, 40, 35 years ago. Went to St Thomas's Hospital in London. That was interesting because it is, or was, a teaching hospital. And they took some scans of my neck where the parathyroid is. And this nurse said to me, you've got a lovely neck. And I said, oh, thank you. She said, I don't mean outside, I mean inside. She said, can we take some scans of you and use them for teaching in the school part, you know, showing pictures of inside my neck. So I said, yes, of course. And they took a load more scans or whatever they did, So I wonder how many thousands of doctors and nurses have actually had a look inside my neck over all these years. But that was interesting, St Thomas's, right by the Thames there. That was lovely. And again, they were lovely staff, the nurses, everyone there, really nice people. I've just made myself a cup of tea and I was thinking, who do I know that's interesting to chat to on a podcast episode? It's not so much finding interesting people, there are lots of those around, it's finding someone that is willing to have a chat, to sit in front of the microphone and actually talk to me. At school, in the classroom, there was a tape recorder, a reel-to-reel tape recorder on a trolley, expensive one, ferrograph, nice machine. And, you know, in all the years I was there, I never saw it working. I never, ever saw it being used for anything. Why didn't they get us to do perhaps practiced interviews with people? Someone might want to go into journalism or something. Mind you, we were all a bit dense in the C stream. They probably didn't bother. They kept the tape recorder for the A stream boys aspect. But that would have been interesting. Interviewing each other on tape so we can have a listen back and learn from mistakes. But no, we didn't do anything like that. They just talked rubbish. In English, we were told to write stories. Write a story about so... Oh, right, yeah, we'll write a story about so-and-so. Boring. Why didn't they say, write a newspaper article? Imagine you're a journalist. Someone's been found at sea. They fell off a boat or whatever, and the lifeboat went out to rescue them. Write a newspaper article about that in so many words. That would have been interesting. I would like to have done that. No, we didn't do that in English. No, we had to write some daft story about, what was it, about a postman? I remember the woman saying, write about a postman. At my school in the 60s, the 50s, they deliberately made it boring. I'm convinced they deliberately made it boring for us kids. They didn't want to be there, the teachers. We didn't want to be there. They didn't put any effort into teaching. They didn't even try to make it interesting, which is such a shame. Our teachers seemed to be bored most of the time. I suppose it was quite obvious, really. They didn't enjoy teaching. One thing that struck me about Nurse Diane, as I shall call her now, from now on, that's it, Nurse Diane. One thing that struck me talking to her was she loved her job. She said several times, I loved my job. And as I said, you don't go into nursing to get rich. It's a vocation. You have to love the work. And it's so nice to meet someone that loves or did love their job. So many people these days, oh, Monday morning, oh no, it's work again, I can't stand it. They stay at home, they work from home, they go off, what is it, sickies, they throw sickies, they hate their job, they hate everything about it. I must admit, all the jobs, I haven't had that many jobs, I've been self-employed most of my life, but the jobs I have had, I've never hated. Had I hated them, I wouldn't have done it. I would have left and done something else. I would not want to wake up on a Monday morning thinking, oh no, I can't stand this. I can't face it. If that had been the case, I would have left. In fact, I did leave a job. The marine electronics place. I was on people's yachts down at Southampton, Poole Harbour and all that, Shoreham Harbour, doing radar, radio telephones, you know, ship-to-shore radio, echo sounders, all that stuff. I enjoyed the work. But my boss was an idiot. There's an idiot behind a desk. He was a total idiot, my immediate boss. And the pay was abysmal. It really was abysmal. For the knowledge and the skill, yes, I will say I was skilled. You know, you can't repair radar equipment and echo sounders, sonar, unless you're skilled in your line of work. So I was skilled. I remember the chap in the stores. He used to tidy up the stores, sweep up around with a broom, you know, muck around. Goods in, goods out, all that stuff. He got more than me. He was on, I know it's only £2, but £2 a week, more than I was getting. I couldn't believe it when he showed me his pay slip, because we were chatting one day, I don't know why, about how much we get paid, and he told me, and I couldn't believe it. I said, no, that's more than I get. He showed me his pay slip, £2 a week more than me, and I'm the skilled technician or whatever I was called. I should have been called an idiot. Anyway, I left. I went and said to the boss, that's it. I'm going. And I did, I left. Going way back to the 1950s when I was a lad again, when I was a boy, I remember a chap always moaning about his job. He worked in a shop somewhere. I think he was manager of this shop, and it was quite hard work. He was in charge of a lot of people. And he was always saying, I'd like to be a postman somewhere down in Devon or Dorset in a village, just pottering around on a bicycle delivering letters. And I used to say to him, well, if you want to do that, why don't you go and do it? oh, yeah, oh, maybe I will one day. I'm fed up with this. Maybe I will. He never did. All he did was moan about his job. I think he had the idea that being a postman down the West Country somewhere in a small village, delivering half a dozen letters a day, was ideal or idyllic. That's a good word, idyllic. What he didn't realise was the pay would have been useless compared to what he was earning, because he was very well paid in his job. It would have been hopeless. He would have hated it after a couple of weeks, I'm sure. I do remember a chap in the radio and TV workshop in the 60s. He hated it. I don't know why he hated the job. Probably because he couldn't do it. He was hopeless at repairing tellies. He was forever asking people for help. Oh, I can't find the fault. And one of the lads said to him one day, why don't you leave if you hate it so much here? And do you know what he did? I couldn't believe it. He picked up his toolbox, packed his tools away, and he left. He walked out. Of course, we all thought he'd come back in 5 minutes. He didn't. He never came back again. Apparently, he contacted the service manager, said he'd felt unwell or whatever, and gave his notice in. But he just walked out halfway through the working day. I thought that was excellent when I was a teenager. I thought that was a brilliant thing to do. I've always felt that you have to go with your instinct in life. If there's something that you don't like, then change it. I mean, even if it's your husband or wife, don't stick with them. Make them miserable as well as yourself. Change it. Say to them, I'm sorry, sorry, old man, to your husband, sorry, old man, but I got to trade you in for a younger model. No, seriously, if you're unhappy, change it. I remember someone saying that to me when I was in my teens. He said, you've got your whole life ahead of you. I forget who he was. He was an insurance man, that's right. He said, you've got your whole life ahead of you. If there's anything you don't like, then don't do it. Change it. Give it a try, but change it. And I'll never forget him saying that. He also said, do you want to take out a pension, an old age pension, private pension? And I said, what do you want about? I'm 18. I think I was about 18. And he said, yes, well, now's the time to do it. Take your pension out now. No, I wasn't having any of that. I'm not doing a pension plan when I'm 18 years old. I won't be retiring from work for 100 years or more. Of course, before you know it, oh, hang on a minute, I'm 65. What's going on? Actually, I'm 73 next month. Where are we? May? Yes, I'm 73. Stone the crows. Do you like your job or do you hate the thought of Monday morning? Oh no, Monday morning. Dread it. Let me know. raysrants@protonmail.com. Be interesting to know. For those of you that work, I know a lot of you have retired. Some of you are still at school from the emails I've had, which is good. A whole spectrum of listeners, all different ages. It's lovely. And from all parts of the world, which is good. Just going back to the chat with Diane, she said to me after she'd heard the playback, the recording, she said, I didn't realise that I had such a Sussex accent. And I must admit, I didn't realise. Now, her dad, Trisha's dad, who's passed away now, sadly, he had a real Sussex accent. Some people would say it was Hampshire, but it wasn't. He was born and bred in Sussex. It was a Sussex accent. And I've been looking into this. Kent accent, of course, Cornish, Hampshire, and there's Surrey, Sussex. Birmingham, look at Birmingham, the Brummie accent, Geordies. Now, I'm not talking about Scottish, Welsh and Irish, because they are, that's different. I'm talking about different counties. I suppose in a way they are different counties, but the subtle differences in accents between, say, Kent and Sussex. There is a difference, and I found a video on YouTube. I looked it up. Type it in, if you're interested, that is. Type it in yourself, put British accent, and then just type in Kent, Sussex, Surrey, Hampshire. And various videos come up. And there was one on there. I would like to have recorded the audio and play it to you. But of course, there's all the copyright issue, which is a shame. But there was a lady on the Isle of Wight recorded in 1959. And she's all rah-rah. Well, not all rah-rah. I can't do accents. A friend of mine can. But I can't do it. So I won't even try. But it was very Hampshire, Isle of Wighty accent. And then they had someone from Kent chatting on there from the 60s. Someone had gone round making these recordings. Then someone from Sussex. And there are subtle differences. It's quite interesting, actually. Of course, the Welsh have their own language. So did the, I say did, I think the Cornish still do. Anyone from Cornwall, can you speak Cornish? Send me an MP3 Actually, that would be interesting. Let's have an MP3 chat from Wales, Scotland, because you've got your own language, Irish. I think you've got your own, or did have your own language. It's interesting, isn't it, going back. As I said, it was only when I listened to Diane on the recording that I realised, listening carefully, yes, she has got that accent. I'd never really noticed it before. All the decades I've known her, I hadn't noticed it. Do I have an accent, I wonder? What do you think? Or what in it? Now, some people will say, oh, if you don't pronounce your H's and your T's properly, then you're common. It's not that you're common, I haven't been educated properly. It's different accents, isn't it? Look at the Cockneys, the way they speak. It's not common. That's their accent. That's their way of speaking. I had a friend from Birmingham, Struth. I could hardly understand what he was saying. He came down to work down here for a couple of years, and I just got to know him. I could barely understand what he was saying sometimes. And of course, on the radio, amateur radio that I do, I chat to someone in Scotland. If they've got a real heavy accent, I'm not quite sure what it is they're talking about. I wonder whether that happens the other way round. If you've got a real good Scottish or Irish or Welsh accent, can you understand what I'm saying? Because I'm speaking in a completely different way than you're used to. That would be interesting. Yes, do let me know what you think. It's quite amazing, really, because we're such a small island. You look on the map, compared with Africa and America, we're a tiny little island, the whole of Europe, huge places, and yet we have so many different accents. Liverpool, the Liverpudlian accent, as I said, Birmingham, Geordie, there are so many. And the West Country, oh, army man, I know you don't talk like that down there, but that's the way people seem to think that you talk. Oh, what was it, Wurzel Gummidge? But I'm sure you don't speak like that. I've been to the West Country a lot of times down there. It's lovely. Somerset, Devon. I love it all. Dorset, beautiful place. And I've never heard people going around saying, oh, ar. Anyway, all interesting stuff for such a small island. I knew an Italian chap once. No, I don't speak Italian. And I said to him, in your country, do you have people that are common? We have people that go around saying, oh, what, mate? You know what I mean? And he said, oh, yes. We do. We just the same as in English. He could speak English, of course. He said, it's just the same. We have different accents. We have posh, what, and common or what. I don't know why I keep saying or what. I don't suppose common people go around saying or what in it. People say in it, don't they? Oh, that's isn't it. I think that's isn't it. Is it? I don't know what they mean. I think it's isn't it. A friend of mine, he's passed away now, sadly. He moved here from Southampton, so that's Hampshire. And he had a real Hampshire accent. And I said to him, I love your accent. And he said, oh, I haven't got an accent. I can't. He wouldn't say after. It was after. Afternoon. I can't do it. But he didn't realise that he had an accent, which I found odd. I recorded his voice and played it back. And he said, yeah. I said, well, it's not the way I speak, is it? And I suppose he thought I had the accent. I don't know. It's all interesting stuff. Hello, we're dinging now. Something's dinging. And another idea I had about interviewing people and chatting to various people, if you have a story to tell, that might be interesting. About the old days, of course. I'm looking for a nurse. Well, not really. I'm not looking for a nurse. I'll rephrase that. I'd like to chat to a nurse who was nursing in the, say, in the 40s and the 50s. Obviously, they'd be pretty old now, sort of 80s, 90s. But that would be interesting to hear about hospitals and everything that went on in the wards back in the 40s and 50s. It wouldn't be an interview as such, but if you want to do a little recording, if you were a nurse back then, or anything, even if you were a motor mechanic back in the early days, say in the 40s, 50s, cars then and cars now, working on engines back then and working on engines now. Not that you would be working on them now, but you get the idea of what I'm saying. If you've got a story, I wouldn't be interviewing you as such. Someone did say to me, why don't you do Skype interviews? Because I know people do that. But I don't really want to get into that. It would just take up so much time. This is the trouble. We're dinging again. I think I must be on an aircraft. Fasten your seatbelts. Extinguish cigarettes. Who remembers that? I remember flying on planes and sitting at the very back of the plane where you could smoke. I did that in my teens, early 20s. Have a cigarette on the plane. Can't do that now. Changing the subject completely, We were at Amberley Museum on Sunday. Trish bought me a book, a second-hand book. They've got a kind of charity shop there in the museum. And it's really good. What's it called? Century Makers. 100 Clever Things We Take For Granted, Which Have Changed Our Lives. Traffic lights. Cleveland, Ohio, is credited with installing the first traffic lights in 1914. Good grief. That's a long time ago, isn't it? The idea crossed the Atlantic and the first traffic lights were installed in Leeds in 1923, coming to London in 1925. By the 1990s, traffic lights were coordinated by a central control using camera surveillance and computers. They have quite a few old books at the museum. It was only a pound. In 1907, Persil was launched as the first washing powder in Germany. The name was derived by two of its active ingredients. Was that perborated silicate? 2 years later, Persil was acquired by a British company, blah, blah, blah. And there's a load of stuff here all about it, which I won't read out because we'll all go to sleep. The miniskirt was 1964. Well, we all know that. Oh, look, there's a load of pictures here. You can't see the pictures. I can. I mustn't look at the pictures. So that was good, the miniskirt. The Moog synthesizer, you know, for making music, the synthesizer, 1963. That's going back a bit as well. I was there then. I was around in 63. Silicon implant. Oh, there's a picture of two silicon implants here. 1962, using silicon gel. Well, apparently there were lawsuits and all sorts. The ring pull can, the parking meter. A very interesting book. I shall refer to that in future episodes. Oh, no, you're saying, please don't. Some of it's boring, of course, but in the main, there's a lot of interesting bits of info in there. Just before I leave you in peace, email from Anne. She listened to the midweek message where I was saying, talking about the NHS and nursing this Sunday, which I've now done, of course, with Diane. She was saying that it's amazing. She's in America, by the way, Anne. Hello, Anne. She said it's amazing that you can walk into your doctor's surgery in the UK or into A&E, the hospital, and you don't pay a penny. It is, Anne. The system is fantastic. The idea is brilliant. She's just amazed because she says in her email, I won't go through the email, but she says that she has to pay for this and pay for that and pay for everything. And then there's the insurance, medical insurance and whatever. She seems to be quite taken aback. There's an old expression, taken aback, that we could just walk into a dentist, you say, Anne. We can't do that here anymore. There are hardly any free dentists anymore, NHS dentists, as they're called. We do have to pay at the dentist. But we do go to the doctor's surgery, and as I'm now an old age pensioner, I hate that term, makes me sound old. I don't pay for prescriptions, I don't pay for any tablets, medicine, anything like that. Any treatment I need at the hospital is all free. But when I say free, it's all paid by the taxpayer, isn't it? Nothing is free. But that's the way it is, Anne. The problem is there are too many people. Anyway, I'm not going to harp on about the NHS again. Too many people, not enough hospitals, not enough doctors, schools, dentists, not enough houses. We're a tiny island. Look at us on the map. We're a tiny island and we are just absolutely full of people. On that note, I shall now leave you in peace. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Do let me know if you'd like to hear any more interviews. raysrants@protonmail.com. I shall try and find some interesting people to chat to. In the meantime, behave yourselves, be naughty, don't get caught, look after yourselves, and I will see you on Wednesday with yet another midweek message. Take care. Bye-bye for now.